Welcome to the SAI podcast series, a production of Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute. The SAI is a federally funded research and development center operated by Carnegie Mellon University and sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense. Today's podcast is available on the SAI website at www.sai.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm a principal researcher here at the SAI. And today, I'm very pleased to introduce you to our guest, Rachel Karch. She is the Technical Manager for Situational Awareness in the SEI's CERT division. And today, we're here to talk about network border protection, part of our best practices series. And before we get into that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about how did you come to be here? What is it about the SEI that brought you into this work, and what is it that you hope to accomplish with it?
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. So prior to coming to the SEI, I worked in private industry as a network engineer for close to 15 years. And I came to the SEI in part because I saw a way to help make a difference for our sponsors using a lot of the things that I learned from actually doing the job in private industry and finding ways to help use what I learned to help other people do things better.
Okay. So you're basically very much in tune with our major mission of transitioning better practices into the software engineering, and in your case, the information security community. So that's always good. So network border protection, our topic today, is about sort of our borders around our organization's data, which is one of the valuable things that each organization tries to protect. So let's talk about what is it about network border protection that's problematic, and what kinds of things are we researching at the SEI to help deal with the issues in protecting your network borders?
Sure. So network border protection, I mean, that is just one piece of what has to be a multifaceted and multi-layer approach to security. There used to be, I can think way back in the day, back when I was a network engineer, a lot of times people had this idea that all you really needed was a good firewall. You know, you needed this one device and you would keep all the bad stuff out and you would keep all the good stuff in. And obviously, we all know that that's not the truth. We all know that you need to have lots of different security tools. You need to have lots of different approaches and different, you know, in some cases you need special policies. You need a lot of different tools in your tool bag in order to maintain security for your entire organization. So network border protection is just one of those tools. But even so, it's a little more complicated than just saying protect the border, because most organizations that we work with and most of the organizations that I worked at prior to coming to the SEI actually have multiple layers to the border.
Right.
And so that's what creates the challenge because, frankly, in my experience, I find that there's often errors of either doing too much or doing too little at different places in the border. So it seems like an important topic for us to cover because it is a critical part of anybody's defense. You know, like I said, it's not the only thing, but it's critical. So we wanted to just address some of the best practices.
It's like putting a lock on the door. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a lock on the door, then you have to decide who to give keys to.
Yeah.
And that's part of that decision of who gets in
to
what pieces. But if you don't have a lock on the door, then anybody can get in.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really don't want to go there either.
Yep.
So that's the first thing, I think, is we don't want everybody getting in.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you've learned in terms of working in this area that are helpful to people that are trying to make decisions about how much, how far, you know, the contrast between usability and security is one that immediately comes up in this when you start talking about policies. So
how do we help
people to make those kinds of determinations?
For every organization, it's ultimately going to be different.
Sure.
Every organization has to assess their own needs, and they have to, you know, based on what it is they're actually trying to do, what their business is, what their users need. So there's always going to be, let's say, opportunities for people to decide for themselves. One of the things that we like to share with people, though, is at a very broad level, here's a way to approach the problem. So when we're talking about network border protection, typically, you know, most of our larger organizations will have a router at the internet, you know, like something at the internet border. And then on the inside, you know, just beyond that router, they'll have a firewall. And so we talk to people about what's the best general approach to securing the border at the internet router, and then what do you do on the firewall? Mm-hmm. And then within those best practices, there's opportunity for people to assess their own needs and to make specific decisions that are relevant to their situation.
So, for example, organizations that are engaged in collaborations with other organizations, everybody's got a firewall and internet, and we have to figure out how to allow, I've heard tunneling used, you know, how do we let them through the tunnel mm-hmm. and keep other people out? Mm-hmm. So this is one of the decision areas that people have to pay attention to, because if those people that I like can't get through the tunnel, we can't work together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the key part of that is knowing all of those requirements. And that is frequently very challenging, especially if you're dealing with an organization that has grown over time, maybe an organization where there was a merger or an acquisition, so different business units have now come together, and maybe the requirements and what was going on were not very thoroughly documented to begin with. And so now you're in a situation where people can say, well, I know we've got some business partners that we need to allow through the firewall, but we don't have the list of all the IP addresses. We don't have the list of all the users. And so that can become very challenging because, you know that you have this need, you have to allow certain things through, but you don't necessarily have clearly documented what were all the things that we needed to allow through. And frequently, people are very sensitive to the risk of stopping business, the risk of accidentally shutting down a connection that needs to be kept open. In particular, if you look at certain industries, for instance, financial, if you accidentally terminate a connection that a trader was using to do something that was very time sensitive, there's a huge business problem there. And people are very worried about that risk. Unfortunately, what we sometimes see result is that people say, well, I can't risk accidentally shutting down something that was supposed to be kept open. And so they err on the other side of letting too much stuff through.
Ah, okay.
So that's why one of the key things that any organization should do when they're looking at their policy for network border filtering is understanding what is supposed to be allowed through. And that can sometimes be a project in and of itself. Doing the research, working with all the business groups, working with all the user groups, understanding everything that is supposed to be permitted, and at some point making the decision about whether to, okay, we now have to go ahead and close down some of these holes because mm-hmm. we haven't found anybody who can admit to ownership of allowing this connection through. And that's, that is potentially a risk. And that is something that every organization needs to reach a point where they can say, all right, we've done all the research we can. We now accept the risk. We need to close some of these holes for our security.
So for organizations that are kind of in that position of, I'm not sure if these openings, these tunnels are allowed, is there an intermediate way of, I'm thinking of strategies like having all the traffic from those ports going into like a quarantine area so that I can monitor, you know, is there actual activity going on before I... Let them back into the fold, as it were. So, oh, yes. Once a quarter, somebody needs to actually access that. And are there things like that people can do? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Something that people can do would be to monitor. So say you look at maybe you look at your firewall rules and you see a bunch of rules that are in there that are permitting certain things. And you're kind of like, I don't know if that's supposed to be there. You can set up a sort of schedule or a system where you say, we're going to monitor for 3 months, and we're going to see if any traffic hits these rules over a period of 3 months. And when you're devising something like that, you need to make sure that you're keeping your business rhythms in mind so that you know, like maybe there's something that only gets processed once a quarter, you know? So you have to make sure that you make that window long enough that you're capturing things that may only happen occasionally but are very business critical when they do happen. So definitely set up a monitoring schedule, see if anything is actually successfully hitting the rule, and then sometimes it'll be a matter of detective work after that, where you can say, well, we saw this IP address, talk to this IP address, let's go see if we can hunt down the system owner and figure out who these people are and just ask them directly, what is this thing?
Yeah, and I think of there's a lot of businesses that have different cadences for different kinds of activity. There's a lot of financial activity that happens on a quarterly basis, but you've also got things like we go to this trade show every February, and there may be things related to getting ready for that trade show that we work with partners on that we only see them in February, mm-hmm. things like that. So the message is, you know, you want to be careful, but you also need to think about your own stakeholders, your business rhythm, and understand where there might be things that don't happen all the time but still have an impact on your business if they're missing. So that's challenging.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, there's always, when you think about it, everything we do in security is ultimately about trade-offs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's almost always some sort of trade-off between, we'll say, usability and security. Mm-hmm. There's always something that makes it a little more challenging for someone to get their job done, but it's being done for the sake of security. So it's the same thing when you talk about, you know, maybe locking down the network perimeter, locking down the firewall. There is that risk that you're going to accidentally maybe keep somebody from being able to do their job, but you're doing that because of the risk that you see with this gaping hole in the firewall, sure, that nobody's able to explain. And that's why, and one of the best practices that I discuss in my blog post is about labeling everything. In particular, most firewalls these days give you the ability to put in a note or a label on a rule, and future network administrators and future firewall administrators will thank you if you go ahead and you put a note in every time you create a new role to say, this is what this is for. This is the business unit that requested right. this. This is the reason it's here, so that at the very least, you know, 5 years from now when somebody's looking at it and they see, oh, that rule was put in there to support something that hasn't happened since 2013. That business is no longer here. We can go ahead right. and we can close that hole in the firewall.
Or we've reorganized and we no longer, that part of our business is mm-hmm. actually not something we do anymore.
Yeah.
So we don't need to interact with people in that area.
Yeah.
So how frequent is it, in your opinion, that those kinds of holes are the entry point? I mean, you've got to go looking for the holes if you're a malware, you know, kind of enthusiast. Are those kinds of holes in the firewall, are they a large part of how malware and ransomware and all these other attacks happen, or is this a relatively small part of how, you know, organizations get targeted? Do you have any information on that? Is there any data on that?
I don't have any data on that, so that's not a question I can answer authoritatively. I do know that we see, for instance, things like ransomware and malware. There are a number of different vectors through which that comes in. A lot of it, anecdotally, I'd say a lot of people believe that it happens frequently because of user activity. So somebody clicks on something in an email is a frequent problem. Somebody took a USB drive and put it in their laptop, and they shouldn't have done that. And there was, you know, there was a file on mm-hmm. that USB drive that infected their laptop. I can't say whether holes in the firewall account for a significant portion of that kind of activity. I do know that it has been claimed that certain recent events happened or at least spread as a result of certain ports that were left open on people's network perimeters. But I can't really say anything authoritatively about that.
It just seems, you know, from my viewpoint as somebody who works in an organization that mm-hmm. I know is trying to collaborate, mm-hmm. I can see the proliferation of open ports being something that would provide, you know, somebody that has a nice random number generator, yeah. you know, with entertainment on a Saturday night. You know, it's not out of the out of the realm of possibility that these are ways that people get into your organization.
Exactly. People out there are scanning all the time. And anybody who's looking at the logs, you know, if they're logging on this kind of thing, you know, if they're looking at logs on their internet router, if they're, you know, logging on the access list, if they're looking at the logs on their firewall, anybody on the internet is going to see that people are scanning all the time. So any port that is open that somebody can identify as open is a possible target. We have seen at organizations where they had a port that it was deliberately open because they had a business partner who needed to be able to access something, but it was not left open only to the business partner's IP addresses. They just left it wide open because in some cases, you know, they might not know all of the IP addresses that need to connect. It is, I mean, I've seen this in prior jobs. We see this kind of thing a lot. that gets abused. People find an open port, and you shouldn't underestimate the ability of people to identify all sorts of ways to abuse those open ports. So, you know, the best practice is if there's something that you need to allow to be open to the outside, and it's not something really basic like, you know, port 80 for your website, you need to lock it down to the known external parties that need to be able to get in. You shouldn't, there are very few ports that you should allow open, you know, to your network.
To the world.
You know, to the world, that aren't like the really basic, like port 80, port 443 for your website, port 53 if you're running a, you know, DNS server, and, you know, only allow those ports open to those specific right. servers. You know, there's very little other stuff that the whole world should be able to get into your network and do.
So labeling is a best practice. I'm also hearing logging, and not just logging, but looking at your logs and reviewing those. Mm-hmm. How often would you recommend people to be reviewing logs for, you know, their internet router when they're trying to, especially at the beginning when they're trying to figure out, what do I really have?
Yeah, so that's a very difficult question to answer because, of course, a lot of people think that the problem we have in security these days is not a lack of data, it's too much data. And so, you know, show me the organization that has enough staff on hand that can, you know, not only can they log on everything, but then they can sit and review those mm-hmm. logs every day. Realistically, that's not going to happen. So there should also be a process of, and again, this is sort of a project that people have to go through, identifying what are the most important things, what are the things that you care about the most, prioritizing those things, make sure that you're logging on those things, and then having a process, you know, whether it's a human reviewing them, and, you know, again, it's not very realistic to say we can sure. assign lots of staff to just sit and pour through the logs, but at least to, you know, have maybe those events that are considered critical flagged in the logs. And also, you know, if you have some security tools that can parse those logs and alert
that,
on,
yeah.
you know, you get a security tool that will parse the logs and alert on the things that are right. of the most importance to you. But critical to that process is going through the, you know, the internal examination to decide what your priorities are. And that's something that a lot of people skip or they're not sure how to do it.
It's not a security thing, right?
Yeah.
That's a business stakeholder thing. Mm-hmm. And on the list of things that business stakeholders have to do, that probably doesn't make the top three when
yeah.
you're in a, you know, typical business that's trying to run for a profit.
Yeah.
So I think part of this education process on border protection is this is critical to your business. If you want to make sure that you're not leaving openings into your internet borders, your firewall, the people on the business side have got to take some time
mm-hmm.
to help the people in security to understand what is a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, it's going to be the opinion of a technical engineer, not a business person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
sometimes they may coincide, but not necessarily. You can't count on that.
Mm-hmm. So ideally, you need both, because you need the business side to be able to say, what are the things we care about the most? What are the events that we care
right.
about the most? What are the systems we care about the most? On the technical side, first of all, you need people who can understand, well, what would that look like in the logs? If something
right.
were to happen, how would we know it? But at the same time, you know, sometimes people are very worried about things in logs that they shouldn't spend a lot of time on. So I talked about scanning before. If somebody scans and you just see on your, you know, internet router, you know, your external facing interface, somebody did a port scan. They were looking for open ports. How much do you care about that? We know that that happens all the time. There's a good chance that you don't want to send somebody to review the logs every time there's a port
sure.
scan, because they would be doing a lot of reviewing logs just to say, oh, look, somebody port scanned us. Maybe there's a reason out there why somebody would care about that, but that's to a lot of people consider that to be noise. And
mm-hmm.
so you wouldn't necessarily want to get too reactive
right.
every time there's a port scan. But, you know, maybe you notice that there's one particular IP address out there that seems to be persistently trying to scan
right.
you and is trying different kinds of scans and has, you know, just spent 2 weeks attempting every possible scan known to man and has, you know, followed it up with some brute force attempts and they all failed. But, oh, we can see that there's this one IP address that really seems to be trying something.
Right.
Maybe then we care about it.
Yeah, yeah. And it could be anything from a competitor looking for industrial espionage to someone with more malicious intentions. And so, but you're not going to know that until you, but yeah, which ones do I triage to actually go after is going to be one of the challenges of this. So I think you're going to be busy for a while because network border protection, I mean, I can think of, you know, machine learning kinds of applications, all kinds of things that in the future could help with this. But I think the message that this is both a business and a security issue, and that you need to understand what do you have and what do you need to leave open is really the key to protecting your border for your internet and for your firewall. So those are things that we want to make sure our listeners take home today. Any other take-homes that you think you want to make sure people pay attention to when they're dealing with this kind of issue?
I think I'd probably reiterate, label everything you do. That is, you know, the biggest problem I've seen when I've been looking at networks, in particular in past jobs, is coming into a new place and nobody understands why something was done. So labeling everything is really important. The other thing that I would urge people, if they are, you know, especially if you're in the process of maybe you're setting up a new service and people aren't sure, well, what do we need to permit through? Okay, let's just permit all ports for now and we'll lock it down later. That later usually doesn't happen. Mm. People often just in the name of trying to get something done, they will, you know, have kind of a really, really wide hole in the firewall to just allow everything through and we'll figure it out later. But once they have achieved what they need with the system, nobody sticks around to, okay, now we have to do all the extra work and figure out exactly which ports this is using and lock it down. And so I see a lot of security holes that were left by people just trying to get a job done and not going back and doing the cleanup later. So, go back and do that cleanup.
So either do the lockdown process initially so that you're safe from the get-go, or plan for the cleanup and don't let that planned for time get away from you,
because
we all know how easy it is to let that get away from you.
Yeah, so ideally do the lockdown initially, but I know what reality is like, and I know that often there are deadlines to meet and nobody's able to figure it out beforehand, but it has to be, you know, like it has to be built into whatever project you're doing that, hey, this project is not considered completed until we have locked down the firewall appropriately.
Okay. Good advice, Rachel. I thank you. And I thank you for joining us today and expanding our ideas in terms of what some of the best practices are in network border protection. For our listeners, this is not the only podcast on best practices in network security. We have several others that are being recorded and have been recorded, and those are going to be available through links in the transcript for this, as well as on the website. So we invite you to look at some of those other podcasts as they become available. Also, reiterate that this is going to be available at our internal SEI website at www.sei.cmu.edu/podcast. Also, there's a blog post that Rachel has authored on this, and if you go to our insights.sei.cmu.edu site for our blogs, look under the authors and look for Rachel under Karch, K-A-R-T-C-H, and that's probably the easiest way to find that blog post. So thank you for doing that for us as well. This podcast is also available, in addition to our website, on our YouTube channel, the SEI YouTube channel, and also on the Carnegie Mellon's iTunes U site. So we invite you to find it in any of those places that are convenient to you. As always, if you have any other questions for us, please don't hesitate to contact us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you, Rachel, and thank you all for watching.